This week, we hear from renowned business expert Mark St. Cyr on the concept of selling the fraternity. What are we doing wrong? What could we do better? And are there some hints on how to do this? Then we'll hear from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison in an all-new Masonic Minute. Then, what's the difference between a maze and a labyrinth? What is the purpose of a labyrinth? Did our ancient brothers really construct them as a meditative technique? Find out this and more this week. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 456. Wow, 456. Well, this week we've got a couple of great pieces, a new Masonic Minute from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. So first things first, I want to give a thank you to all of our producers, our fellows, and our contributors of the Whence Came You podcast. We can't make this show without you, and if this is your first time listening to the program, welcome. And this is listener-funded education for Freemasonry, so if you are enjoying the content, if you have enjoyed the content in the past, please consider going over to WCYpodcast.com and clicking on Support the Show. There we have multiple ways to assist the program through online, monthly donations, and even single-time donations. Whatever you feel comfortable with and whatever you can do to help out is greatly appreciated. So, again, my thanks goes out to our producers, our fellows, and our contributors. Thank you all so much. The next thing I wanted to quickly mention is that open enrollment for online great books is currently happening. It will be happening until the 7th at midnight. That is the 7th of August at midnight. I doubt they will give you a couple more hours or whatever, so if you want to get in on this, you'll need to head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Our Friends at the top, and scroll to the second choice, the Great Books program. And from there, you can read about the program and get 25% off of your first 3 months, which is a steal. And just know that it's a wonderful program that allows you to do some great introspection and discussion on the world's great books with a trained interlocutor to facilitate the conversations. It's a really, really great thing to do, especially right now during the COVID times. A lot of us have not been able to find something to assist us during this time in fulfilling our educational needs and whatnot. So this is another wonderful opportunity. So again, the Great Books Program, WCYpodcast.com, click through. And by the time you're listening to this, you probably only have 4 or 5 days left. So make sure you check that out. So as you heard in the opener, we've got some great papers. And you know, the first one that I wanted to read to you all comes from Brother Mark St. Cyr. Mark is a broadcaster and does a lot of things in relation to leadership, business, capital markets, entrepreneurship, motivation. If you're interested, you can go to markstcyr.com to check out some of what he does. But he had an initial couple paragraphs on his idea of selling the fraternity. And I asked him to expound on it a little bit. And he recently penned a piece for us. And I'd like to read that for you now. Sell. The real word Freemasons can't say or do. Today, Freemasonry, aka the fraternity, as constructed, is at a crossroads. On one side, there's its rich history. Its celebrated 300th anniversary and current global configuration is resonating allure that continues through Hollywood, books, and more. Then there's the other side, filled with calls for stagnation, impending doom, or worse, oblivion. There may be only one way to save it, and that is to start openly, quote-unquote, selling it. Now, I'm very cognizant that there are a few that just read the above and are having aortic palpitations. there's probably an even greater number that are looking for their blood pressure meds. However, before you all begin looking for the where and how to bring Masonic charges, let me assure you, this quote-unquote selling is not what you think. So, let's continue, shall we? The issue I would like to put before you is one that is plaguing the fraternity. And if there is no deviation from its current practices and trajectory, selling, as in the one that induced those original palpitations, of anything that isn't nailed down, then auctioning off what is will be the end result. Of that, I can assure, just look around, need I say more? Yet it does not have to be if we begin to understand not only the why and how to start selling the ideas of the fraternity, but mostly allowing current as well as prospective members to not only quote-unquote buy in, but stay in. This is a pretty tall order. However, it is far less difficult both for understanding as well as practice. The reasons for it are also simple. If we don't, it may well be all over and precipitated via our watch. Yes, the stakes may never have been higher, only to be fueled, ever the higher, with what is happening around us made manifest via the pandemic, race relations, displays of anarchy and more, and yes, a lot more. So, what are those that talk about all this impending doom and gloom supposed to do about it? Well, this is the most generic of questions perplexingly stated. And for those of you that caught my use of the term stated rather than asked, you are more than likely one of the now ever-growing cadre of brothers truly ready for making a change. You get it. Things need to be done. No more talking. Most others are fantastically, as well as fanatically, adept at not only pointing out the obvious, then masterfully complaining about what should be done being their crowning achievement of the evening. It's time to put this all to an end. But that end all starts at the beginning. Beginning, as in before a petition is even accepted, not during, or worse yet, after a vote, as I'll explain. Let's first start with a question. I specifically ask you that are reading or hearing this to answer this one question forcefully, succinctly, and thoroughly. Why should anyone join Freemasonry? Oh darn, I forgot to mention something else, the rules. Because there's always rules, right? And if there's one thing this fraternity seems to love more than bullion, thread, or buttons, it's rules. So, here they are. But not to worry, there's only a few. Rule 1. You cannot use the go-to through symbols, allegory, blah 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 spiel. Rule 2. You cannot name drop until you have at least exhausted 10 minutes of other examples of persuasion that also did not include any names. Rule 3. Reread Rule 1 and 2. For those rereading how Masonic charges are filed, don't worry, stick with me here. It actually does get better from here. Two of the most frustrating questions I hear from people interested in the fraternity goes something like this, quote, I asked one about being one, and all I got was a bunch of mumbo-jumbo about founding fathers, former presidents, and other stuff. And when I tried asking about other stuff, it was nothing but evasive. So, I just said thanks and walked away. End quote. Then there's this, quote, I went to a lodge and had a meal with some members trying to find out what it was all about. All I could find out was there were some things in regards to initiation that take place which might make me feel a bit uncomfortable, but they couldn't seem to tell me anything more, saying I would see then. That made me more than uncomfortable, and I never went back. Sound a bit familiar? Maybe a bit too familiar? Not only can I help you eliminate this dilemma, rather, I can help you change them into more compelling discussions warranting further follow-through. So who am I? And why am I saying any of this? I can hear you demanding, fair enough. My name is Brother Mark St. Cyr. I'm a member of Sunrise Masonic Lodge number 783, located in Gahanna, Ohio, a direct suburb of Columbus. I am also a 32nd degree Scottish Rite Mason of the Northern Masonic Jurisdiction, and also a member of the Ohio Lodge of Research. And I cognitively understand what many in Freemasonry are currently dealing with, not because I'm a Mason, but because of my business acumen. I am one of a small group of business leaders that has obtained global recognition status for my thoughts on business, capital markets, and more. My thoughts or quotes have been published across the globe, but more importantly, before my retirement at age 45, I was what is known as a turnaround specialist. This gives me a unique perspective for insight as to what is currently ailing Freemasonry. None of the above was stated to impress you. It was only to impress upon you that I might know a bit about of which I speak. However, what's most important in all of this is I know how to prescribe corrective pragmatics that produce results. The reason for that claim is when it comes to the field of turnaround specialists, I've done it more than once, and at the highest levels of corporate America. And it is this rare insight for pragmatics I offer to you to learn not just the how-to many so desperately need, but more importantly the why that makes the arduous morph into the effortless with higher efficacy. Here are five easy steps as examples to not only engage but entice prospective candidates without violating Freemasonry's number one rule regarding recruitment. Step 1. Stop sounding like you're reciting some section out of the recruitment handbook. Remember, we don't recruit, so why try to sound like we do? Many do this, and mightily. It's not only off-putting, but simultaneously it subliminally raises red flags. Talk in your casual voice and forget everything you've done and thought previously. The first urge is to tell. Stop it, please. Step 2. Every opening statement should be a question coming from you, not the candidate. Here are a few examples from the viewpoint you might have set out a table somewhere. What brings you to inquiry about Freemasonry? Please feel free to ask me anything. I'm an open book. No question within reason is off bounds. Step 3. Answer their questions with certitude and forthright. Stop being milquetoast, or worse, sounding like you're almost embarrassed, trying to make excuses for what a ritual or ceremony might imply, let alone then trying to explain it to someone that has no shared experience. Step 4. Your answers should begin, then explain, the overall picture, not the actual step-by-step means. Stay big picture, if you will. Here's an example. Question: what do you mean, make good men better? Your answer: have you ever really thought about what it truly means to embark on the journey for true self-improvement? Do you think that that journey is an easy one to make? Do you think it's an even harder one to make alone? Think of it this way. Within what we call the Lodge, we are a gathering of like-minded people dedicated to that pursuit. Notice the key word I said there, dedicated. That's a distinction with a difference, and it's not taken lightly. It takes commitment to be a Freemason. It's not for everybody, but those that get it, it's the only one. Step 5. When you get asked about ceremonies, ritual, whatever, stop going to the go-to allegory wrapped in mystery blah 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 babble. Please, I'm begging you. What you need to do, more than anything else, is properly understand yourself. What all that pomp and circumstance, allegory, ritual, and more actually means, and why we do it. Sorry, I digressed. Yeah, let's just say I'm passionate about all that stuff. What one needs to do is say something on the vein of thought. There are certain aspects of Freemasonry that are not only ancient, but have been passed down through centuries and carried out to this day in like manner. Let's call it a tradition. For sure. There are very distinct reasons why we do certain things the way we do, but one of the things that makes us different than most is those very traditions and the actual ongoing practice of following them. Think of it this way. Can you see or feel the difference in a bond to those that have gone before you that did the same things that you were to do today? Imagine if you were on a path to become an astronaut, and your first real task to begin your journey as to fully understand what powered flight was and meant, was to construct a Wright Brothers-type plane using the exact tools that they did, with another gentleman on the exact same journey as you, not only to act, but to be in many ways a partner, much like the brothers Wright. Think you'd have a better perception of what it meant to not only fly, but then move from there to the stars? Think about it. These are only a quick five to get you thinking, yet it's really the point of the insight for perspective I'm really trying to get across. However, what cannot be glossed over is the following. You, as in you, the one reading or hearing, must also first have to fully understand what it is you're selling in order to effectively, morally, and most importantly, do and say it in a way that will make your Grand Lodge proud, rather than condemning. We are not the Rotary, the Elks, or any other institution. We are Freemasons. And we are Masons precisely for that reason. We are unique. Period. Start not only acting that way, but believing it. Why? It's contagious. Only in the good way. I can both teach and explain more. However, it's all a moot point if we ourselves are not willing to make our own, maybe more important first step, which is, accept the reality that this current crisis is what most are going to use as an excuse as to not change, or worse, offer as a primary excuse as to why their lodge is in an abysmal order, rather than to fully embrace the idea that it's exactly circumstances like these, those currently known as 2020, that render precisely the most opportune circumstances that allow for the many changes that are not only needed to begin, but more importantly, allow implementation. That's why the time to sell properly is now. Get this right, and the rest follows. Alright, well, my many thanks goes out to Brother Mark Sincere. You know, somebody who is as busy as he is, coaching and doing all of the things that he does. Just want to say a big thanks goes out to him for lending this really professional type view to what we are all in this for. Freemasonry does have an issue now, and we have some real opportunities, not like anything we've ever had before. And I think Mark has a great sense about this thing. Again, if you want to know more about Mark Sincere, I'll link his website in our show notes, and the paper that he wrote for us will be within the show notes for you to download as well. Next, I'd love to get into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother, Stephen L. Harrison.
When you arose from the altar as a newly initiated entered apprentice, the senior deacon instructed you to salute the junior and senior wardens, and then he turned you to the east and said, "You now behold the worshipful master approaching you from the east a second time." With that, the worshipful master presented you with your first Masonic gift, something you would, in one form or another, carry with you through your Masonic journey, even through the remainder of your life and into eternity. It is your Masonic apron. The apron, with a few exceptions, is an ever-present item, your constant companion in the Masonic degrees. In the first three degrees, you are taught to wear it as an entered apprentice, fellow craft, and master mason, and are given the purpose for such and any accompanying symbolism. In subsequent degrees, most have their own apron in varying colors and even different shapes, most bearing designs representing the symbolism of the degree. In the Blue Lodge, officers' aprons carry the design or insignia of each office. Those who have served in the East will usually wear a past master's apron, showing the compasses above a quadrant with the sun in the center. The chapter or Royal Arch apron is red bordered on a white background and displays a triple tau, bordered by a triangle and a circle. The York Rite Council usually wears an apron bordered in royal purple, with a triangle enclosing a trowel and sword. Likewise, most of the Scottish Rite degrees have aprons in a range of colors, with symbols representing the content of the degrees. Masons generally are familiar with all of this, but may not realize it was not originally called an apron. The word derives from an old French word, naperon, a similar sounding word preceded by the letter N, a term Stone Guild members would have used. As the word crept into English and became napron, a quirk of the English language caused the dropping of the first letter. In English, nouns beginning with a vowel are preceded by the indefinite article an, and those beginning with consonants are preceded by the word a. The slurring of the phrase a napron was heard as an apron, and the n was quickly dropped. The English word napkin also derives from napron, but has retained the N. Whatever your thoughts on the naperon, napron, or apron, as we now call it, and all its accompanying symbolism in all the degrees, perhaps the best and simplest way to characterize it is the very first thing you heard about it when you were presented with your very own white leathern apron. It is an emblem of innocence and the badge of a Freemason, more ancient than the Golden Fleece or Roman Eagle, more honorable than the Star and Garter, or any other order that could be conferred upon you at this or any future period by king, prince, potentate, or any other person except he be a Freemason. I hope you indeed wear yours with pleasure to yourself and honor to the fraternity. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right. Many thanks goes out to illustrious Brother Harrison for his amazing work there. If you want to know more about Steve Harrison, go on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on the bookstore, and check out his many books that he's written and that he has edited. Something Steve was really, really involved with was the Ravi Denslow manuscripts, and not enough can be said about the amazing information contained within those. So, to that end, I would definitely tell you to check out the Missouri Lodge of Research so that you can get those in hard copy. And if you'd like to do that, there will be links to the Missouri Lodge of Research within the show notes. Additionally, you can pick that up on Kindle anytime for your intimate perusal in the palm of your hand, both volumes. Pretty cool. Well, before we go any further in the show, I did want to tell you all a little shout out goes to my good friend and brother, Scott Duball. He had an article published in the most recent issue of the Fraternal Review. He wrote an article called Justice Requires Action. This particular issue was really great and I think is super timely in terms of what is going on today. But Scott has his piece, which really is a boiled down version of a great presentation that he does. And I would just definitely urge you to check out this issue, not just because Scott's in it, but this is truly a wonderful issue. If you want to know more about getting into the Fraternal Review magazine, which is the Southern California's research lodge, you're just going to want to go to theresearchlodge.com and go ahead and subscribe, and you can get a digital subscription or you can get a in-print subscription. I myself, I pay for the double, so I get the in-print and I get it via email so that if I can't read it, at least I have it in the palm of my hand. So again, congrats to all the people in this latest issue. It's pretty awesome. Speaking of magazines that got published just recently, the new Philalethes magazine came out. So if you're interested in that, I would tell you to check out that website as well. But actually, this week on the show, I'm going to be reading a piece by Sir Knight Theodore W. Bergfeldt, PC, past commander. He wrote a piece called Negotiating a Sacred Path, and he wrote it for the Knight Templar magazine, which was literally just published. It's the August 2020 issue, and I thought it was just so awesome that I wanted to read it on the show, but I wanted to reach out to the author to make sure that was okay. And I was really surprised because a lot of times these authors are super busy and they don't get back to me right away. And so Brother Theodore actually got back to me almost immediately and said that it would be totally fine, that he really liked the idea. So he says that he hopes that what his article entails will be helpful to brothers and others. So without any further delays, let's go ahead and check out this great piece by Theodore Bergfeldt. Negotiating a Sacred Path by Sir Knight Theodore W. Bergfeldt, PC. Have you ever walked a labyrinth? Well, if or when you decide to do that, as my wife Joan and I have done many times, I assure you that at the conclusion of your walk, you may and probably will feel a whole lot different than you did before that circumambulation happened. What is this thing called a labyrinth, anyhow? Well, in Greek mythology, a labyrinth, referred to as an elaborate, confusing piece of artwork that was sketched and painted on the stone floor, designed and created by the legendary artificer named Daedalus, ordered to be made by King Minos of Crete. Its function was to hold captive a legendary monster to the Cretans as the Minotaur, which eventually, as the story tells it, was killed by the hero Theseus. It turned out that Daedalus had so cunningly designed and constructed that particular labyrinth that he could barely escape it after he built it. In the English language, the term labyrinth is generally synonymous with the word maze, for as a result of the long history of unicursal representation of the mythological labyrinth, most contemporary scholars and enthusiasts have observed a major distinction between a maze and a labyrinth. A maze refers to a complex, branching, multi-cursal puzzle with choices or paths and direction, while a unicursal labyrinth has only a single path into its center and back outward by means of the same path. For that very reason, the walker of a labyrinth ought never to become lost while on its pathway, unless the walker is totally ill-focused. Unicursal labyrinths have a very long history, which dates backward to thousands of years ago, but that history is too involved for the presentation at this time. However, every Freemason, ancient or modern, especially every Knight Templar, should be familiar with the purpose of a Gothic labyrinth and should have traversed that figure on the stones more than just once. In bygone times, many of the Gothic cathedrals included a floor labyrinth installed there by those operative masons and artists who were responsible for the erection of the cathedral. Incidentally, you need to know that the word cathedral referred to the seat of the bishop, who served as the chief architect and superintendent of the edifice. The bishop would manage his see or bishopric or district from his seat in his cathedral, but well before the cathedral had been erected, the bishop would confer with master masons who generated the design with the approval of the bishop. Those same operative masons would have carefully designed and constructed an 11-circuit, 42-foot diameter labyrinth having a 16-inch wide unicursal pathway, measuring a total walking distance of 861.5 feet on the floor of every Notre Dame Gothic cathedral located in the country of France. Legend has mentioned that the circular design of the 11-circuit, 42-foot-wide, unicursal 16-inch-wide, 861.5-foot-long pathway came from the tradition of the Knights Templar. That same legend tells that this specific design had been found by the Templars in King Solomon's Temple and that the design was transported to France by the Nine Templars who occupied space on the Temple Mount, located in Old Jerusalem. That style of the 11-circuit labyrinth is also associated with the Freemasons, the guilds that provided the expertise and the laborers who worked to build all of the Gothic cathedrals found throughout France. Be proud, my brothers, because those cathedral builders were our original Masonic family members. Did they do their work well? The ancient structures are still standing, so you be the judge. Not very long ago, some unthinking or terroristic person set fire to the Parisian Notre Dame Cathedral. What a pity. Similar destructive tendencies occurred late in the year 1968 in several places located in our United States. Some people, I'll refer to them as crazies, chose to quote-unquote tear down the establishment in America, and their escapades were ignited during the years 1968 to 1970. At that time, people engaged in a sort of creative destruction of anything traditional simply for destruction's sake without any kind of real replacement for what was destroyed. If we think about it, that sort of destructive tendency has been ignited again since 2015, and no amount of labyrinth traversal will eliminate that kind of negative behavior. One manufactured demonstration after another seems never to end. Nowadays, people are getting paid to quote-unquote raise hell. Ignorance always costs someone an outrageous amount, and in many cases, that someone is you and me. But it is not always about financial loss. In fact, history has shown that labyrinths have been removed from many of the great Gothic cathedrals only because of ignorance. In fact, researchers have learned that the labyrinth was removed from at least one of the cathedrals because children had been enjoying themselves by walking, running, or even dancing along the universal pathways. Just think about that. In our present time, it is very difficult to lure children into churches or any kind of religious structure. Maybe it would be sensible to have more labyrinths installed in churches, so that children would want to walk, run, or dance along the labyrinth pathways once again. I seem to remember a biblical quote having to do with suffering the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. Can you recall who said that? Allow me to be your escort and take you on a short walk starting outside the Western Rose window of Chartres Cathedral in France, moving through one of the three open western doorways and stopping where we will all meet just inside the cathedral's western entrance. Spend some moments just gazing at that rose window from where you are standing now, just inside the western wall. Beautiful glass, isn't it? Next, turn and look away from the rose window and allow your eyes to turn downward. There, you will be able to look at the 42-foot, intricately designed universal labyrinth inlaid by utilizing very colored stones that give shape to the design of the artwork we have been talking about. Imagine that the western rose window might be folded down toward the design before us on the floor so that the rose would become something of a mirror image of the Chartres Labyrinth. That, I assure you, is not accidental. The Masons who toiled in building this cathedral did what they had planned to do from the very beginning. This might be your opportunity to navigate the labyrinth. Go ahead and do that. I am very patient. It does take some time to walk all of those 861 feet on the stone pathway, doesn't it? However, now that you have made the walk, you do feel different, correct? By the way, you have just completed your walk around and into the round table of the nave. Having completed that portion of our walk, turn your head around and face eastward, looking down the nave, and let your eyes fall on the eastern end of Chartres Cathedral, halfway down the nave. As you move in the easterly direction, you will arrive at the midpoint of the edifice where you are standing between the transepts. Notice that they branch outward to the north and south, forming what have been called the quote-unquote arms of the pattern being formed for you. Those transepts become the arms of the cruciform shape of the cathedral. The midpoint also forms at the center of what has been denominated the square table of the nave. Proceed eastward. Near the farthest end of the cathedral's nave, you will finally be standing at what theologians, historians, and others have called the oblong table of the nave. When Mass was being celebrated by a priest and his parishioners, the Eucharist, or Communion, would be prepared at that oblong table. To summarize what has happened, if you were to view the nave and transepts from a position above the whole of the structure, you would notice that a huge Roman-style cross has been formed by the position of the nave and the transepts. We need to be informed that traversing the quote-unquote round table, a reference to the labyrinth during the times of the Crusades, was sometimes referred to as masking a journey to Jerusalem. Why was that? Well, in those days, the dreams of many in France featured making an actual journey to the Holy Land so that one might be able to participate in the freeing of the holy city Jerusalem from the Islamic hordes. But because of the large amount of had to have had acquired in order to get to the holy city, only the wealthiest individuals were able to make the trip. Just about everyone wanted to go there, however, the huge expense involved prohibited most from doing that. What the poor people did became the next best thing. They went to the Notre Dame cathedrals and negotiated labyrinths there, which, by that time, had become a substitute way of making the journey to Jerusalem. The exact center of each labyrinth was recognized as the Holy City, because the six stone or rose petals located there became the substitute for the prize, the city of Jerusalem. Incidentally, a large number of those devoted travelers who visualized themselves as pilgrims making their way to the Holy City sometimes made their trek in a painful way along that 861-foot-long path of stones on their knees, and quite often, the whole length of the pathway became thickly bloodstained. Traversing the labyrinth had become one of the most devotional sacrificial acts that they accomplished in their short lifetimes. The first time my wife Joan and I walked a labyrinth happened at East Liberty Presbyterian Church in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. At the time, that church owned three labyrinths, two portable canvas ones and a permanent on the stones one. People of that church had named the experience a prayer walk, and at other times, a meditative journey. Our first walk was a very memorable experience for both of us, and it became the first of many more such prayer walks that we made, some at that church, others in several other locations. We even constructed a seven-circuit classical labyrinth behind the church where we were members at the time, using sod, stones, and earth as construction materials. It may still be there, for all we know. Researchers have learned that labyrinths have been on planet Earth, in the United States, and in many other countries, not for just hundreds, but for thousands of years. Some of them are small classical three-circuit ones. Some are larger seven-circuit ones. But many are the classical 11-circuit, 42-foot-wide circular type, very similar to those still extant in some of the Notre Dame cathedrals in France. Some prayer paths have also been built of loose stones, sodded garden plots, or whatever other building materials were available to those Homo sapiens who lived on Earth way back when. My wife and I own some smaller versions of the classical 11-circuit forms. We have a 1-foot sand labyrinth that any incapacitated person can use. That one can accommodate even a sightless person who is able to push along the universal sand-strewn pathway using only an index finger as a stylus. We own a smaller, all-metal 11-circuit model which one can travel by means of a pencil. And finally, we own a pocket-sized model which consists of an oval-shaped stone upon which is etched the complete 11-circuit design. To traverse that model requires a stylus through the size of a straight pin. A 10-minute drive eastward from our apartment finds us at the entrance of La Roche College, where we can proceed up the driveway and further inward, past the beautiful mother house of the college. Behind the mother house, we find another building known as Kiern's Spirituality Center, and just behind that, an expanse of lawn inlaid with stones in the sod, we find a 42-foot, 11-circuit classical labyrinth of the style one may experience at the Chartres Cathedral in France. That labyrinth is open to the public every weekday and night throughout the year. It is never closed, even when snow is its blanket. Every child of God ought to attempt to walk a labyrinth somewhere, for doing so will help you to, quote-unquote, be still and know that He is God. Joan and I have learned about the spectacular value of devout prayer and meditation. Simply stated, prayers occur when we talk to God. And while we are in meditation, He answers us. We have learned over and over that all of the grand architect of the universe wants to do is to help us, and His divine consciousness will deliver for our needs, even before we ask Him. The purpose of walking the labyrinth is for us to talk to our God before we begin the walk, continue presenting our petitions to the divine mind as we walk, get rid of emotional and mental garbage as we complete our walk to the middle of the six-petaled figure, and wait for answers to our questions and solutions to our problems as we complete our journey, tracing our steps out of the center. We have been, and you too will be amazed by the answers and solutions that you will receive when you take this quote-unquote journey to Jerusalem to heart. Hugh of St. Victor, 1100 to 1141, articulated a deep understanding concerning the labyrinth. He stated, quote, "When we lift up the eyes of the mind to what is invisible, we should consider metaphors of visible things as if they were steps to understanding," end quote. The labyrinth is a visible thing that, through the metaphor, allows us to lift up the eyes of the mind to the invisible world. The labyrinth is a tool that can connect us to a higher dimension and a higher power that originates in the mind of God. Long forgotten, that power has been lying dormant in the archives of the Christian mystical tradition under centuries of dust. The creative intelligence that gave us the labyrinth understood the mystery behind human existence. The labyrinth symbolizes an old watercourse that dried up due to time and circumstance, but the stream is filling up again, now with clear, cool, life-giving water, inviting us to drink. The labyrinth has lain awaiting rediscovery, longing to guide us while we walk this earthly path. The time has come. I look forward to meeting you on the pathway or inside the six petals, sometime, somewhere, perhaps soon, if His intricately detailed plan wills it to be so. Sir Knight Theodore W. Bergfeldt is a past commander of Pittsburgh Commandery No. 1 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and is currently serving as associate prelate. Now, regardless of your religious affiliations, you have to agree that the idea of the pathway, the idea of the labyrinth in terms of a meditative tool to communicate with the grand architect and receive the answers, think about that and how they come to you. This singular type of consciousness idea is so crucial today, period. Over the last few years, there has been an increased interest in the idea of meditation and contemplation. Several years ago, past Grand Master of DC, Most Worshipful Adams, wrote a book, you know, a three-part series on Meditations of a Master Mason. And since that time, people have become more contemplative in their experience. And most recently, Brother Chuck Dunning's work in Contemplative Masonry, that's his book, it's a wonderful book, I highly recommend getting it, and I'll link it in the show notes. This is another way to meditate, albeit perhaps a little bit more focused on Freemasonry. And of course, we do need to mention here that in recent times, there's this idea of mindfulness and all that it entails, but we should also remember that sometimes mindfulness isn't the best course for some people. If you are practicing mindfulness, this is good, but it requires an amount of training to do so because it can lead to other issues of existentialism, issues of depression even. And it's not designed to do that. This is like a mind trap that we get in, and why it's important to understand the contemplative experience a little bit more before you just dive in. Some other resources I would recommend are, of course, some various meditation apps. If you're interested, I'll have links to those in the show notes as well. No benefit to the show for checking those out or anything. It's just something that I have used in the past and I found really works well. But again, going back to this piece, the history here on the labyrinth and terms that I had never heard before, like unicursal, to really distinguish the idea of a maze and a labyrinth. Just fascinating piece. To Sir Knight Theodore W. Bergfeldt, my eternal thanks for letting us read this. And hopefully this will inspire some of our readers to do a little bit of mindfulness thinking and perhaps traversing the path. Maybe you practice this already or know of something. Maybe you have one of these in a park or in your backyard also. If you've got anything like that, shoot me a message or an email or throw it up on the Facebook wall for the show and in the comments on the episode. I'd love to see what you guys have and hear about some of your practices as well. That's it for this week. I really hope you have enjoyed. We'll get back to answering some additional user-requested topics in the coming weeks, but I wanted to take a little break and read some of these great papers that have been coming out. I want to thank the North Carolina Research Lodge for having me on recently to do a presentation. I did my presentation on apotheosis and quantum entanglement. I want to thank everybody involved at Esotericon for allowing me to go there and do my presentation on the esoteric anatomy of man. And I also really want to throw a big thanks to Brother Joe Martinez, his kids, and his wife, Barb, for being such amazing hosts. You all likely don't know, but I took a little road trip with my family, and we met his family, and we stayed with them for the weekend over Esotericon, and I presented from his house, and we had a really great time. It was all of our kids, 7 kids, 4 adults, 2 dogs, and it was just a lot of fun. And it was likely, you know, outside of the conference, probably my favorite part about Esotericon 2020. really do appreciate Brother Joe and Barb and all of the kids for letting us hang out and just spend that quality time together. And I hope you guys are all doing the same things, you know, being mindful of course, you know, social distancing and quarantining yourselves. But, you know, as family units, I hope you guys are staying in contact with each other and FaceTiming and talking a little bit about mental health this week, you know, with the mindfulness aspect. But it's also really important. Humans are social creatures. So I hope you are at least finding a way to use Zoom or whatever to connect with your family. A little bit. And your coworkers, turn on that camera, take the tape off and let them see your face. So it's really important. But that's it for this week. I hope you all have an amazing week to come. Remember, MasonicCon Attleboro has been pushed back even further. We're into 2021 now. It's really important. Brian Simmons wants to make that go as a live event also. And so keep in mind, for your schedule, MasonicCon Chicago 2020 is still September 18, 19, and 20. However, it will be a mixed event. We have in-person and we have virtual attendance. So we will have links in the show notes to go ahead and get your ticket for a digital executive pass and check out all that that entails by going to MasonicConChicago.com. Thank you all so much for listening this week. My thanks once again to the producers, the fellows, the contributors, and everybody out there who assists us and shares the episodes and more. We'll talk to you all next week. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.